22 years ago, what was then called the General Accounting Office issued a major report lamenting the Defense Department's long history of cost and schedule overruns in its major weapon systems, but expressing optimism that the end of the Cold War made for a rare opportunity for culture change within DoD acquisition. After two decades of overhauls to procurement laws, GAO's diagnosis of DoD's acquisition weaknesses might as well have been written today. Then, as now, programs overspend their budgets and blow past their schedules because of unrealistic requirements and rosy cost projections. Over the last 10 years, the Median Developmental Acquisition Program overspent its initial cost estimates by 31%. Paul Francis, the GAO staffer who led the drafting of that 1992 report, told Federal News Radio this week that's not because Congress failed to put good acquisition policies into law. It's because no one, so far, has figured out how to tackle that cultural piece. He says the fact that Congress has not been able to fix a 40-year-old problem through legislation suggests the defense acquisition system has reached its own equilibrium.
And I think to look at that problem and describe it as a system that's broken, I think underappreciates what's going on here, because if something was broken, you would just go and fix it. I think it's more instructive to look at this as a system in equilibrium that produces these results routinely. So looking at the problem like that, where you would describe this as a rational process that's quite routinely inefficient and has some real down consequences, that's a much tougher problem to solve than to say something is simply broken. And that's why I think we need to go down that path, because it is a much harder problem.
As part of a special report that we're calling the Missing Pieces of Procurement Reform, several acquisition experts pointed out to Federal News Radio that DoD acquisition is one of the most studied problems in the history of government. The basic methodologies for bringing systems in on time and on budget are pretty well understood by now, and many of them have already been addressed in past rounds of acquisition reform. Congress is getting a similar message as it solicits comments for another round of reforms that may be up for debate as soon as next year. Experts say lawmakers should build on existing reforms, but also understand that many of the current problems are cultural ones. They're not failures to write the right policies into law. David Berto is a senior vice president at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He served as a top staff member for the Packard Commission, a blue ribbon panel that began examining defense acquisition issues in 1985. He's on board with the idea that the ways to get good results from the acquisition system are well known by this point.
I think they're generally well known in terms of being able to list them. They're not as well known in terms of actually internalizing them in terms of day-to-day behavior. The I have sat on a lot of reviews of weapon systems, Defense Science Board reviews, internal reviews at the Pentagon, et cetera. But based upon those kinds of reviews, all too often the problem, and I think this problem's been laid out by results from PARCA, the Program Assessment and Root Cause Analysis Organization, by the annual reports from the Director of Operational Test and Evaluation, and others. The problem being that both the requirements at the beginning are not structured properly for the kind of funding timeline and technology readiness that the program has available, and then requirements change frequently as we go along until we run out of money, at which point we take what we can get.
In written comments to congressional committees, many defense experts highlighted the existence of a deeply embedded system of incentives that keep the defense acquisition system on essentially the same course, no matter what reforms lawmakers try to throw at it. One common theme: program managers aren't so much managers of their programs as they are advocates for keeping them funded. Dr. Christine Fox, who served as DoD's Director for Cost Assessment and Program Evaluation for 4 years, told the Senate earlier this month that there are no incentives in place right now for program managers to admit that their program has gone off the rails. PMs and PEOs tend to have their performance rated on whether or not they've successfully transitioned their program from one milestone to another, and not on whether they're doing a good job on managing the program's overall lifecycle costs. GAO's Paul Francis says that incentive system extends far beyond individual program managers. He says there are far too few people in the acquisition system who have a rational reason to say no when requirements get out of line or costs escalate. So, in theory, the system has various milestones that acquisition programs are supposed to meet before they can move forward, but in practice, big systems, historically, only get killed when the Secretary of Defense personally says enough is enough.
What are the incentives for stopping something that should be stopped? An acquisition executive who might be spending all of 2 years in the Pentagon, they want to leave their mark on a program. They want to be the father of the XYZ program. They don't want to be known as the person who killed that program. Similarly, program managers, they have a short tenure. Their job is to get the program through the next milestone. That's success for them. Again, it's rational. They believe in the program. But what are the incentives to cancel, restrict, rebaseline a program? That really takes the will of an individual who has to put aside all of the other incentives to say yes and say no. I think it's unrealistic to expect the system to do that very often.
Francis counts Congress as part of that system in equilibrium and thinks that lawmakers have a huge role to play in changing the incentive structure, not by enacting new laws, but by saying no to programs that don't follow the ones that Congress has already passed.
Every year, new programs are presented for approval. That's Congress's opportunity. That's their freshman class to look at. They should hold those programs to the standards that are already in law and in regulation. They should have a high technical readiness. They should have a realistic cost and schedule estimate. They should have an executable business case to start. To the extent programs are presented that break the rules, that take shortcuts, that overpromise, and are approved, then one, we're now reinforcing or filling the hopper up again with programs just like the ones we've done. And then two, it tells other programs this is the way to get money. Don't follow the rules. Get money this way.
But there are other reasons to believe that DoD can alter its persistent habits of cost and schedule overruns. Frank Kendall, the current Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, is also sour on the idea of another big congressional reform effort. He flatly states that most of them haven't seemed to do much good.
What I object to is the idea that there's some magic thing we can do, some silver bullet that we haven't found yet that's going to dramatically improve the results. I don't think it's that simple. I think we've tried most of those.
But he is a big believer in data. So as of last year, DoD, for the first time, began a broad self-critical exercise in data analytics. Among the questions, which acquisition policies are working and which contract structures tend to lead to the best outcomes? Kendall says the data is still extremely noisy and needs a lot more analysis. But Jonathan Etherton, a former Senate staffer who shepherded many of the 1990s era acquisition reforms through Congress, says it's nonetheless a major step forward.
We have better access to data about performance of the acquisition process. And we also have better analytic tools to actually assess the data and understand what it means, put it in context, and use it as a decision-making tool rather than having to rely on anecdotes and people's hunches and things like that. So I think of all the things that I see out there that really characterized what could be a different approach this time on acquisition reform, I think evidence-based decision-making is probably the major thing.
In comments to Congress and Federal News Radio, acquisition experts overwhelmingly agreed that improvements to the acquisition workforce, either in quantity or quality, are essential. Dozens of studies leading back to the Packard Commission have emphasized that point, but it's often undercut by budget realities, as it was during the 1990s when Congress and DoD cut the acquisition workforce in half without doing much to decrease its workload. Several others pointed to structural problems. For example, there are significant disincentives for uniform members to enter into an acquisition career, since those positions are not highly valued within the military's promotion system, and, as a result, don't offer many opportunities for promotion. Again, David Berto.
So you have two choices in that kind of a system. One is you take people who are being promoted through the normal DOTMA process, and you put them in charge of acquisition programs, and we've seen that happen. You know, if you're a great leader and you've been a great leader out in the field, then you must be a good acquisition program manager. And we've also done the opposite, which is we've had program managers who are extremely good, who are non-competitive, and then we have to get rid of them because of the upper out. they don't go up, they have to go out. So there are ways to fix that. In fact, Congress has considered a couple of those over the years, one just shortly after the Packer Commission released its report and the initial legislation and Goldwater-Nichols was passed, but it has never made it out of committee.
Capitol Hill is still in an exploratory phase as to how big it will go on its next round of acquisition reform, but observers generally agree that the slow, deliberate process lawmakers are following right now is probably not going to lead to a major change in direction for acquisition policy. From DOD's perspective, Kendall says the ideal outcome would be that Congress resists the urge to layer on more rules and instead untangle some of the existing ones that it's layered on over the past 20 years.
It struck me how incredibly complicated and difficult it is for a program manager just to sort out all the requirements that he has to follow. And we should be able to simplify that and not sacrifice the intent behind those rules. You know, they've been built on in layers ever since Goldwater-Nichols. There have been layers of acquisition reform or acquisition improvement, one form or another, add on. Many of them have been very good. They're all well-motivated. But that total body of law now is very large and complex. The same is true of the DFAR. It's worthwhile, and I'm not doing this right now, but there is an effort that we're working with the Congress on to take a look at the DFAR and the FAR to see if we can simplify that as well.
The Defense Department is in the process of assembling a legislative package that would do just that. GAO's Francis says it's a worthwhile effort, but he says policymakers need to make sure they don't use the legislation to avoid the cultural questions his office has been asking for the past several decades.
I can agree with people that say it's Byzantine when you look at all of those things and how can anyone possibly follow them. But I think if you went through and pulled every single one of those out and looked at it, it was put there for some reason. And until you know the reason is gone, you don't want to take everything off. So I'm not an advocate of saying, let's take all the rules off and trust all the actors that everything's going to be fine. I don't think that's the case. However, I think you could look at all of those things. Again, think of the key principles that we hold ourselves to, what outcomes we want, and what incentives we want to create, and see how much dead wood is in all of those rules and regulations that are unrelated to those outcomes. I believe they're in there.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.